Naaman has been rattling around in my mind for quite a lot of weeks now, particularly and originally because of the chain message which connects Naaman and his disease with his healing. And if you follow that story, it's as though the baton, the message, gets passed from hand to hand. And I reckon there's maybe a dozen or 15 times at which the message is passed on. It's a bit like that nursery rhyme. You know, this is the house that Jack built, this is the dog that chased the cat. And if you look at verse 13 in the chapter, this is a servant that told the soldier that had the disease, that served the king, that sent the letter, that upset the king, that had the prophet, that lived by the river, that washed off the sickness, that drove the girl to tell the wife that the God of Israel could do the miracle, that converted the soldier that offered the gift, that drove the servant to steal the clothes that the king had to pay for the healing that came for free. It's a lengthy, complicated message. Thank you. You may feel sometimes that you have got a one-line part in life, that you've got one little message, and that's all you've got to say, that's all you can contribute, and it's not important. Maybe you are one of those message carriers, and God can use you to be a link in the chain that brings help to somebody. That's three. Let's get on. In verse 5, there are three pictures, three motifs, which tantalised and stimulated me to think about this story. Look at verse 5. What we've got here are three things. Naaman set off on a journey, there's travelling, and he took gifts of clothes and he took money. Travelling, clothes and money. These are the things that really stirred me up to try and understand this story. Clothes first, let's look at that. The story brings a contrast to two people in this story, linked by clothes. When Naaman had got his message and he carried the letter to Israel, he presented his letter to Jehoram, the king of Israel, and he read the letter and he seemed to be angry and frightened. Verse 7 shows us that he was so upset that he tore his robes. Can I bring the dead back to life? Who does he think I am? What's going on here? He saw the incident entirely in relation to himself. See how the king of Syria is trying to pick a quarrel with me. Interesting. He got angry and upset and he saw the incident entirely in relation to himself. But it felt like a responsibility was being laid upon him. A huge job. He'd got to deal with this stuff. And he tore his robes. It's as though, symbolically, he was tearing off these robes, which were clearly robes of office, as though he were rejecting his status. It was all too much. He became angry, and he tore off the robes. Then Naaman gets this message from Elisha. He travels to Elisha's house and gets insulted. He arrived at Elisha's house with the full convoy. He'd got all his staff, all his soldiers, all his servants, the stretch limos, the full staff team. The whole lot arrived outside Elisha's door. Remember, this is commander-in-chief of a neighbouring country. And Elisha didn't even bother to grant him the honour of a formal greeting. Formal greetings don't particularly matter in our culture, but they do very much matter in other cultures. Naaman was insulted. Notice that he was in the habit of listening carefully to servants. In verse 3, he listens to the slave girl. In verse 13, he listens to his own servants. In verse 21, he listens to the servant of Elisha, Gehazi. He's in the habit of listening to people who have less status, less importance than him. This guy is a considerate sort of individual. He's not proud. He's not arrogant. He seems to be accommodating and steady. But getting ignored here really wound him up. And isn't it the case sometimes that it's the steady people, when they blow, we blow? He's not welcomed, and then he's asked to do something that's silly and it's embarrassing. He had to take his clothes off and go and take a bath. He'd been slighted, he'd been demeaned, his status had been ignored, and he was angry. He wouldn't humble himself and take off his clothes. He wouldn't strip off those robes of office. He wouldn't reveal his problem, his skin problem, to other people. Clothes in the story seem to speak about status. The king, on the one hand, was having too much asked of him and tore off his robes, throwing away those responsibilities, getting rid of them. On the other hand, Naaman wouldn't let go of his dignity, wouldn't let go of his status, wouldn't let go of his trousers. Perhaps like the king, your responsibilities seem too much sometimes. People ask too much of you, and your reaction is to want to throw away the pressure, throw in the towel, tear the robes, get rid of it all. Or maybe you're a bit like Naaman. You don't want very much, but when it's ignored, it hurts. When you feel that you're not given the recognition that you deserve. Perhaps the boss won't grant you that much deserved pay rise. Perhaps the family take you for granted. It makes you angry. And getting angry about status, either too much or too little, is destructive. It was destructive for the king, who nearly provoked an international incident between Israel and Syria. And it was destructive almost for Naaman, who nearly missed his healing. Too much responsibility, too much pride. Are you a Jehoram or a Naaman? Years after King Jehoram was dead, that king had been laid in the grave. Another king was faced with an awesome responsibility. He was faced with the responsibility of bringing healing to others. Rather than refuse that job, Jesus prayed for strength and then shouldered the responsibility all the way up the hill to Golgotha. A few days earlier, years before, after Naaman had died, Jesus chose to lay aside his outer robes, take off those clothes, and take up a bowl of water and wash his friends until they were clean. Jesus contrasts strongly with these two people. He wasn't complaining about too much status, too much responsibility. He wasn't demanding. He just knew who he was. He knew his status. So the gift of clothes which Naaman carried with him are curiously symbolic, I think, of a theme in this story. I must push on. The second area that I want to think about is travelling. What we've got here is a story of cross-cultural mission. There are various points to be made. Look at verse 1. The Lord had given Naaman victory. The Lord is not just God of the Hebrews. He's not just God of the Christians, but he's God of the whole earth. Our God is not just a tribal God, focused, narrowed, preoccupied with his favourite people, studiously ignoring what's going on in other nations, or just using other people as kind of disposable pawns in his plans for the favourite people. He's God over the whole world. He's busy and active amongst people in other nations. Busy amongst people in other faith systems. What's your understanding of the destiny of people who embrace other faith systems? There seems to be perhaps a fairly significant silence in this fellowship over this issue. I don't know about you, but maybe you've struggled over this topic. Naaman was a heathen idolater, and yet God loved him enough to heal him. Will God simply trash anybody who doesn't own the name of Jesus? Perhaps we can begin to talk about this issue. Maybe some of you are really clear and sorted on this. You know what you believe, you know what you think. Maybe others are struggling. Well, let's perhaps the sure people can tell the people who are not so sure. And we can all learn. But my first point about travelling is that God is God of the whole world. Secondly, verse 2, the slave girl. She, remember, had been taken captive. She'd been taken to a foreign land and she'd been made a prisoner and a slave, really. And yet she seems to like Naaman. There's Naaman keeping her captive. And she seems to like him. She seems to be interested and concerned about his welfare. And so she speaks out on his behalf. And more than that, she expects that Elisha will want to do good to this enemy of Israel. Here is a starting point for cross-cultural mission. Simply wanting to bring good. Compassion. Elisha brought Naaman healing for his body and for his soul. Wholeness in healing. That's what we need, isn't it? Complete, whole, full-rounded generosity to others. Healing and holiness. Food and faith. This is what people need. And if we care for others in this wide, all-embracing way, then I guess we won't be going far wrong. And then, after Naaman's received his healing and got dressed again, there's a discussion between Naaman and Elisha about what to do about this newfound faith. Naaman clearly has had a spiritual experience. He has encountered the God of Israel, the God of the whole world. But Elisha doesn't come to him with a set of rules and instructions and load him up. Naaman wants to know what's going on, and there's almost a moment here when there seems to be a rather troublesome and worrying mixing up of the new stuff and the old stuff. Elisha is asked, "What about me bowing down to this heathen idol?" And maybe Elisha leaves Naaman to sort it out between himself and God. Go in peace. Elisha is tolerant, non-judgmental. So what do we do with our multicultural society? What do we do in the 1990s? I was hearing something a while ago about world fusion music, which collects bits of cultural and ethnic and religious stuff and kind of glues it all together. Sound bites. Attractive chunks. Is that what it's all about? Are all cultures equal? Certainly cultures are different. And Christians, it has to be said, Christians have sometimes met up with unfamiliar, strange things in other cultures and interpreted the unfamiliar as evil. Sometimes the church has exported a narrow and a Western and a materialistic lifestyle under the banner of Christian evangelism. And then across the water we see ethnic cleansing. And in our own land we see racist attacks on people. Is it possible to be an evangelical and not be racist? Yes. Please help me work it out. I'm struggling. How do we respond in our city to the building of mosques and temples? Is it stuff to clearly pray against and see taken down? Or is it somehow good that some newcomers in our alien, our unfriendly society can find a place to touch base and get in touch again, perhaps, with the background of their family and their origin and their base. And maybe that will give them strength enough to engage in dialogue, to listen well enough, to hear the good news of Jesus. The Naaman story here gives us an example of cross-cultural mission. I think it deserves consideration. It shows that God is God of the whole world, that God is wanting to do good to all people and bring an experience of himself, bring healing, bring salvation to people over the whole world. And it shows us Elisha, who seems to bless Naaman with a gift of peace, having met with him and brought him a touch and a contact with God. I commend to you the Elisha approach. Clothes, travelling, and finally money. Naaman couldn't give enough away. Gehazi couldn't get enough of it. Gehazi had lived in the presence of Elisha. He'd seen miracles. He'd heard prophecy. He'd been right there, front row seat, in contact with the most startling and marvellous experience of God. And yet, he's trapped. He's caught in greed and materialism. He steals and he lies. And years later, another prophet and priest and king lived with and walked with another individual who stole, who lied, who missed it. And Gehazi and Judas show us how easy it is to be in the right church, to sing the right songs, to quote the right scripture, to be able to churn out the right stuff, and to miss it. Gehazi's uncontrolled appetite for the comforts of life destroyed him. He couldn't get enough until it ate him up. And in contrast to that frightening story, here's Elisha giving it away. And God clearly wants to give freely. Naaman could not pay for the gift. He couldn't give his money. He couldn't give it away. He couldn't even do valiant, courageous acts to somehow earn this healing. There is nothing that we can do to earn our way into God's good books. There is nothing that can buy God's smile. And yet he smiles on us anyway, because of Jesus and because of his kindness towards us. He wants to do us good. We please him. As we look up to worship and to pray and to seek his face and to seek to do good in deeds and in bringing faith and bringing life to people who are our neighbours in this city and our neighbours across the world. God's gift is free. Let's receive it.